Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call now with your tax questions at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins, a.k.a. the tax man, in studio. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
I wanted to make a prediction on the two trials that the national media is following. One down in Georgia, the Ahmaud Albrecht case with the three defendants, and then the case up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I think the Wisconsin case, I think he walks. I think in Georgia, three go out the back door of the courthouse with a sentence of life without. That's my guess.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Obviously, I think all lawyers yesterday, if you happen to watch some videos from the courtroom in the Kenosha, the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, got a little uneasy, I think, feeling watching a prosecutor get admonished by a judge.
Superior Court judge.
Oh man, it was brutal to watch. But you know, that's what happens, Mike, when there is a constitutional right to remain silent, and a prosecution implies that somehow implies that you're guilty when you do remain silent. You know, that's a problem.
There's a lot of constitutional rights in that case, the Rittenhouse case.
Certainly, yeah. So that was what the big story of the day was yesterday, where the prosecutor was dancing around that particular issue. And of course, the judge was not kind to him stated that the defendant has a right to remain silent, which is key in the law.
And you follow this, you have followed this case, and you yourself are an attorney, albeit on the civil side. But people are hearing this statement that the prosecution is probably trying to throw the case so it gets dismissed. Why would they do that?
Well, the issue that you have here is that it's clear that the prosecution's case isn't really going well for them. And so another chance, another jury, maybe try to get things right the next time in their case. It's possible that, you know, a mistrial for them, normally it's a win for the defense all day long if you get a mistrial. But this may be a win for the prosecution if they get a mistrial. Now the issue is going to be, Mike, is whether or not that is with or without prejudice. So if it's with prejudice, so if the judge deems that the prosecution's actions in this case were so beyond the pale that you cannot bring these charges again against Kyle Rittenhouse.
Double jeopardy? Is that the phrase?
It's not really double jeopardy. It's really just saying that he believes in his mind that the prosecution's actions were to throw the case, as you use the words, because they understood that the case wasn't going well for them. So he could actually rule a mistrial with prejudice, meaning that's it. You can no longer bring these charges again. Okay. Or he could just do it a mistrial without prejudice, which means that the prosecution will get another bite at the apple and could, you know, again, get in front of another jury and see if they could fix some of these mistakes that they're making.
Yeah.
During the next trial. Problem is that in these criminal cases, Mike, it's the facts. Mm-hmm. You know, and with video evidence, and it's hard to get around, you know, those types of issues because the tapes kind of speak for themselves.
And the state's own witnesses weren't the best of witnesses either.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And, you know, you've practiced law and been before judges, both district and superior court judges. I've been on the other side as a reporter. That's a rare thing when you see a sitting from the bench dressed down. Not a defense attorney, but the state prosecutor.
That's right.
District prosecutor.
Yeah. It's me and a fellow lawyer in our office yesterday were talking about, you know, it's not a good time when the defense attorney's like, he's an experienced prosecutor. I cannot believe that he would take those types of actions. So when the other side is saying he should know better, it's a bad situation. And then of course the judge just really laid into the prosecution, you know, and that got a lot of the headlines yesterday. And it was troubling to see some of the reports. You know, you see these headlines, Mike, and you know, one of the things that from a legal perspective, when you really get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it truly was a matter of constitutional rights of a defendant, you know, and then you read the headlines and you start seeing the judge now they're trying to imply the judge is biased in some way, you know, that he's favoring the defense over the prosecution. No, what he's doing is he's favoring the constitutional rights of an individual, you know, over the prosecution overstepping those bounds and implying that by upholding your constitutional rights, you're in some way guilty, which is not permissible. It wouldn't matter whether it's Kyle Rittenhouse or any other defendant for that matter. The fact is that's just, that is a fundamental, I think he used the term like law 101.
Yeah, he did.
You know, that you cannot use the defendant's silence as a means to prove that they are guilty. That just cannot happen.
Well, and the other thing, the other nugget in this trial too, is you have 12 people in the box plus the alternates, and they're always admonished by the judge when they leave not to listen to radio, read reports, or watch TV or go to the crime scene. Keeping a lid on 12, and I don't believe they're sequestered. It's just ripe for, if it goes to appeal, if it reaches that stage, boy, there's a lot of just moving parts in this trial that really favor the defense at this point.
And we should have a verdict here fairly quickly. I mean, I would imagine the defense is supposed to rest today. I think they got three more witnesses to call. And then you're looking at, you know, probably a closing arguments tomorrow.
Closing arguments, charge the jury, and they'll deliberate.
And then they'll deliberate. Yeah. So, you know, who knows how quickly we'll get a verdict. And you just hope that whichever way it goes, you know, that's our system of justice, Mike. Whichever way it goes, whether it's an acquittal or a guilty verdict that comes down, that everyone keeps their level heads. In an area that has just been so torn by riots and protests and fires and everything else, that you just hope that there's not going to be any more of that. Because in heck, you could have another situation where more people get shot.
Yeah.
Because of the justice system working.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I didn't mean to take up so much of your time.
Oh, it's all good.
Have some other stuff to push out to the audience.
So a couple things. Let's get back to tax. That was a nice little vignette over there on the criminal side of things. And I think our listeners are definitely interested in those types of matters. But as far as the tax issues go at the moment, you know, as we talked about as the world turns last week. Well, we have the world turn, and guess what? We had a bill get passed.
$1.2 trillion.
What they call the bipartisan infrastructure bill. President Biden has said he's going to sign it on Monday. He's waiting for some Democrats to get back from the climate conference. I don't know how long that thing goes on, but I guess
it's
but they're still going over there evidently. So they'll be back Monday for a bipartisan bill signing. And there's really not much tax legislation in that particular bill. We've talked about it before. They really gutted it when it came for the revenue raising portions of it. Really, it's a crackdown on cryptocurrency is really the best way for me to describe it. They're requiring, so what they ruled before, Mike, is that cryptocurrency, that's Bitcoin, that's Ethereum, that's, you know, all these other coins that are out there. They are taxed as if they're stock holdings. So just like if you own Apple or if you own Tesla, anything like that, if you own those and you end up selling them, then you have to report that gain.
Right.
And that gain is taxable. So in this particular regard, they're requiring that a 1099B be filed. That's a 1099 barter and exchange. That's proceeds basically from this by these coin systems. So I'll admit I'm a little ignorant on the crypto side, but that's the general idea, which is now there's going to be reporting requirements for these information reportings, just as if, you know, your brokerage firm you know, has to report your stock sales every year. Now these coin systems have to report them as well. But that's really the only kind of tax news of that bill.
How prevalent is Bitcoin? Do you see it with your clients locally that you handle through Harvell and Collins?
We do. I mean, you know, you have people that are interested in it. Obviously, you know, it's one of those things that's been up and down. And if you're on the right side of it,
it's
done really well.
it's volatile.
Yes, exactly.
More so than a Tesla or a McDonald's common stock. It's very volatile.
But yeah, certainly. I mean, that's one of the things, the new age of estate planning and, you know, you have to take those in consideration, these digital assets. That leaves us with this Build Back Better plan, $1.75 trillion down from $3.5 trillion is where we currently sit. And the idea was the deadline was Halloween. The deadline was, you know, we needed to get this done by the end of October.
Right.
And of course that did not happen. And so what the agreement was is we're going to let the CBO score this particular bill. This is what the moderate Democrats wanted. We want to get a score for this bill and find out whether or not it is truly revenue neutral. You know, you hear these, it costs $0. You know, we heard that a lot over the last several months.
Congressional Budget Office.
Yeah, Congressional Budget Office.
Are they truly an unbiased arbiter?
They're supposed to be, right.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be. So the bottom line is that one of the reports I read yesterday says that the issue that this scoring is going to have is that there's $80 billion for IRS enhancement. So basically, so the idea here is you're going to give $80 billion to the IRS over 10 years. And that means that that $80 billion is going to turn into, they believe, $400 billion in collections.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one way to make this quote unquote deficit neutral, is by saying we believe if we invest $80 billion in the IRS, they're going to return us $400 billion. The issue is, Mike, in the scoring aspect of this, they cannot take that into consideration. So what's going to end up happening on the scoring side, they said they can put it in a footnote in the opinion to say that this is what they believe.
Yeah.
They also said that they don't believe that the CBO would score it at $400 billion. It's going to be closer to $200 billion. So regardless, however you look at this, there's either going to be a $400 billion shortfall in the funding of this bill because of the way they score, the CBO scores this, or at least a $200 billion shortfall if you look at just, if you allow the footnote to kind of speak for itself.
That's the Dems making projections that anybody can make a projection. They could have said $600 billion.
That's a projection. That's exactly right. But, but what I want to bring this up to our listeners is that this is going to be a problem, because if the moderates in the Democrat Party were saying we want this to be deficit neutral, we want proof, and we want to be able to hold up a piece of paper from the CBO and say, guess what? It's deficit neutral. That does not appear to be able to be likely to occur unless there's, again, further changes with this particular bill. So that's a huge, huge blow, because remember, you got to get the progressives on the Democrat side, on board, which they're not happy the numbers come down.
Sure.
And then you got to get the moderates on board, which they now want to make sure this thing is fully paid for. And guess what?
Middle class.
You're going to have problems because, again, are they going to be able to come together, because they need every single Democrat vote in order to get this Build Back Better agenda passed at the end of the day? And, you know, you and I have talked about it, Mike, at length. There is a true deadline, and that deadline is December 31st, because something like this does not get passed in an election year. It just simply does not.
Does not.
So we'll see. But that's one of the huge things that's one of the huge, you know, line items that we need to account for in order to see if this is going to get passed or not.
Yeah, the clock is ticking. If you want to reach out to Andrew Foster at Harvell and Collins, call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll talk with the tax man next Thursday again. Thanks, Andrew.